From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of February 2014. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson will report to us on the ag forum that USDA has been holding in Washington, D.C. this week. She'll also update us on what's been happening in the commodity markets. A bit later in the program, we'll hear all about the agricultural weather forecast, and along the way, an industry update from my backyard with Lisa Brultz as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at WILLAG.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up at the CME Group in Chicago. For this Friday afternoon, nearby March contract in the wheat pit at 609 and three quarters was down 6.5 cents on the day. The May futures there at 605 and a half down 8, and July at 609 and a quarter, 8 cents lower. That's the soft red harvest month. The hard red July harvest month at $6.67, 8.5 cents lower as well. March corn futures at 453 down 2 3/4. The May $4.59, 3 1/4 cents lower. July futures at 462. 62 3/4 down 4. September down a nickel at 461.5 in the corn pit. And new crop December at $4.64 1/4 down 4.5 cents. March contract at 473 1/4 down 4 1/4. March soybeans $13.70 3/4 cents up 12.5 cents. May futures at $13.60 1/4, 12.5 higher. July beans up 13 at $13.44 3/4, and the November beans at $11.53 3/4, 8.5 cents higher. Bean meal up $4.90 at $4.55.80, and bean oil at $40.95, 38 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the April at 141.45. That's down 42.5. March feeders at $170.70 finished 42.5 cents lower. The April there at 171.20 down 60. And lean hogs today, $99.35 per 100 pounds, $1.52.5 higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from WILLAG.org. That's Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world right here from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading April at 102.12. That's down 63 cents a barrel. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price, a penny and 9 cents lower at $2.82.07. Ethanol futures trading $2.06, down a penny for the day. And the spread between the two is 76 and 7 tenths of a cent wide. That's about 9 tenths of a cent narrower than yesterday. Natural gas at $6.12.07, up 6 3/10 of a cent. And diesel fuel for the day, $3.09 of a cent a gallon, down 8 1/10 of a cent. Gold futures at $1,323.70, up $6.70, and the U.S. dollar down 0.04 at 80.23 at this hour. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, we'll see sunny skies, a high of 41 degrees. It'll be breezy on a west-southwest wind at 17 to 25 miles an hour. And then this evening, a 20% chance of snowfall after midnight, mostly cloudy, a low of 29 degrees. Saturday, partly sunny skies and a high of 43. A west wind on Saturday at 9 to 13 miles an hour. That will gust all the way to 17. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and 21 degrees. Sunday, sunny skies and 30 on a north wind at 10 to 13 miles an hour. That'll chill things down by the time we get into Sunday evening. It'll be partly cloudy with a low of 14 degrees. Monday, we'll go to 28 and partly sunny. 15 degrees for the evening low on Monday night and mostly cloudy. Tuesday, sunny and 25. And we'll cool all the way down to 10 degrees on Tuesday evening. It'll be partly cloudy. Wednesday, sunny and 24, and back down to 10 degrees on Wednesday evening with a low there at 10 degrees. Thursday, mostly sunny and a high of 19. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Ed Kieser right here on Illinois Public Media at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's check now on this Friday afternoon with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson, filling in today for Mike Zuzlo, who graciously traded slots with her earlier in the week so that we could talk to her on a Friday afternoon. Jackie has been in Washington, D.C. this week at USDA's Ag Forum. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. How are the skies there in Washington, D.C.?
Well, they're 64 degrees and partly sunny.
So, it's a beautiful day.
I can't tell you I've been out there at all.
I know you've been busy for the last couple days, 2.5 days, I suspect. What have you learned from USDA so far? Anything of great importance?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that are important. Of course, the main thing is, of course, the acreage numbers, you know, the yield numbers. I thought it was interesting that, you know, we actually came in at lower acres but ended up with a carryout of 2.1 billion pod on corn. And they achieved that by lowering exports 50 million from where they are currently and raising feed by 100 million. So, you know, I think that one of the big buzzwords around here, or one of the top discussions is they came in with 171 million acres between corn and beans. And most of us in a normal growing year would expect that that's going to be about 174 million. So we know that there's still quite a bit of lateral to be able to move around and to add more acres. And some of the discussion got pretty brisk about that. And so beans, of course, 285 only raised the carryout by 135 million, even though we actually really came in with more acres, more crop, but an average price of 965. So, you know, it's interesting. Beans are definitely supported by meal. They're supported by oil, although they are looking for 200 million pounds less of bean oil this coming year. So, you know, grain consumption, there's a lot of good things. Grain consumption's at a record level, up 2% year over year. Corn itself is up 4%. You know, to me, that's really encouraging all the way around. And when you go to the meetings, you hear about the growth of population, and the continued growth of population and the demand. It really looks like a very, very bright picture. But efficiency, that's, you know, Todd, we're good at that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you an idea about efficiency, when you look at the beef inventory numbers, you know, everybody's talking about how we're so low on the beef inventory numbers. We are actually the lowest that we've been in 60 years. But in 2013, we produced three times as much beef on the lowest number of cattle in 60 years as they did back 60 years ago. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And at record retail prices, although, you know, one of the things that's really good is that the consumer price index it remains relatively low. And so, you know, that gives us perhaps a little bit of help. And I thought another, you know, we always hear how beef consumption is going down, beef consumption is going down. But that's only if you look at certain cuts of meat. If you actually look at beef consumption based on the carcass weight, we consumed in 2013 domestically 76.5 pounds per person. And compared to 1950, we were only at 63.4 pounds per person. So, you know, the beef picture looks pretty strong. The pork picture, of course, we talked a lot about PEDV. We figure there's about 4 million animals gone. It might end up being 8 million, depending upon if they can get it under control. And yet, for the year, even in light of the PEDV, we're projected to be up 1% on production. Again, efficiency.
And they justify that just through efficiency?
Yep. The additional pounds and the lower corn cost, you know, which encourages people to take animals to a heavier weight. And in this particular case, that'll be a good thing for us because they also expect exports to go up by 3%. Milk production going to be lower in 2014, but just slightly. But I thought it was interesting to note that 2013 was the fourth record year of exports out of the last 5 years for milk. And I mean milk and milk-related products. But just some really, really interesting things that show how vibrant this business that we're all in is.
Can I take you back to some of the numbers, the corn numbers you talked about up front just to begin with? Production, USDA set at 13.985 billion. $3.90 season's average cash price. They have ending stocks next year for the 14 crop, 14-15 marketing year at 2.11 billion bushels. You told us that they increased feed usage by 100 million, and I heard you explain some of that with some of the numbers you gave for the livestock, but that they had exports down from our current exports, which I think are 1.6 billion, and those have been increasing for this year. Was there much discussion about why that didn't increase more, or why it was down 50 million? I'm surprised that somebody didn't say something about this.
Well, I myself, you know, as they're going through all these presentations, you don't have the time to take everything apart. Had I not taken physical pictures with my smartphone, I would not have seen it either. And so, I mean, that's the way I do it. I take pictures of every slide with my smartphone.
Right.
But I was shocked myself, to be absolutely honest with you. I would have expected that we would have at least maintained 1.6 or looked at maybe more like 1.8, especially when you have a trend of prices going lower.
Yeah. So the fact of the matter then is it was one of many numbers that was up and not particularly mentioned. So I suspect that nobody asked too many questions about it, or none at all out loud.
There wasn't a single question. Had I seen it and caught it, I would have asked a question about it, but nobody did.
I'm glad you brought it up, because it's an interesting little question there, and it might make a big difference if the livestock and the ethanol industries are mature. How about that? And let's call that a good domestic floor. I think that's the way Darrell Good would refer to it. Then the export market is the place for the volatility, right? up and down one way or the other, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and you mentioned ethanol. That's the same thing in ethanol. That's one thing. You know, we've met the blend wall. It's likely, you know, we're not going anywhere besides that. And the only place we can really grow is basically in the export market, especially when we have a trend of consumption. When you look at gasoline, better mileage on cars, all of those types of things. But the encouraging thing is we are really seeing some dramatic increases in the exports on ethanol. And so, you know, rather than being just flat, there is a chance we might grow some, you know, more corn usage out of ethanol. But on the other side, you know, it's not going to be enough that it's going to offset a lot of other things that we may lose in the interim. But export market is where it's at for everything. It's what's driving the milk market. It's what supported the beef market. It's what's driving the pork market. And, you know, and the big thing with the pork market, of course, is the PEDV, and, you know, if they can figure out how to stop it and how to vaccinate for it, because we currently don't have anything. And, you know, Asia has had it for a long time. Europe has had it for a long time, and they have a vaccination, but it's really not very effective. So this is going to be a very, I guess you'd have a learning curve. Let's say a steep learning curve for the veterinarians and everybody else who's doing all of the, you know, all the research.
If USDA is projecting ethanol usage at blend wall or above, does that mean they're of the opinion that no matter what US EPA has to say, that we're going to blend corn at capacity?
Well, that's certainly, they didn't say that from the platform, but I did ask some specific questions about it, and yes, that, you know, that the implications are far less than what the reaction has been to it at times. And so, they anticipate that the usage is going to be there and it's going to continue to be there.
Anything else you learned that we ought to know this afternoon?
Well, I think something that's really interesting is farmland values, of course, are still very strong. You know, that, as always, variables, of course, are cash and interest. You know, if they expect interest rates have gone up slightly, but not enough to really have an impact. But this is the thing that I thought that was great. The debt ratio right now, as of the end of 2013, is at 10.5%. If you compare that to the 80s, we had an average of 22%. In other words, land values would have to roll back more than 50%. To put us back at the debt ratio that we were when we got in trouble in the 80s. So I think that is a very encouraging point. And weather, they talked about weather, you know, and the Western drought, of course, was the primary focus. And the fact that, you know, some of the crops are still going to suffer due to the fact that the drought was there, whether it be because of water being restricted or it actually still being very droughty conditions. But the thing that's concerning when you see it is that You know, the drought right now covers most of the main cattle and dairy and a lot of the dairy area out there. So that's a big, big question, you know, because when you look at an increase in 100 million bushels of feed usage, you got to have the animals to eat it and the people willing to feed it.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us and for reporting from Washington, D.C. Have a safe trip back here to Champaign County.
Thank you very much, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She joins us on this Friday afternoon from Washington, D.C. She spent the good portion of the week there at USDA's Agricultural Forum.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Hey, don't forget that if you listen to our home station, Commodity Week comes up immediately after this program at 2:36. Otherwise, you can always pick it up on one of our radio stations or at willag.org. Should be there by about 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Coming up next, Lisa Braltz unearths a forgotten kitchen gadget and makes something rich and creamy in this edition of Backyard Industry.
A good friend and I were talking over lunch the other day about how we needed to get back into the habit of more labor-intensive cooking, project recipes, Sever Magazine calls them, to satisfy that urge for process and accomplishment, not just a quick end result. You know, the cassoulet, the beef bourguignon. Weekends usually afford me a little more of the time required to do this. However, project recipes in my kitchen are sometimes for staple foods that can be eaten over time. Bread, stock, beans, that sort of thing. If I'm not holding freezer or cupboard stock on those foods, which happens way more often than I'd like, I turn to prepared versions of those items so I can crank meals out during the week. But my household goes through a lot of bread, a lot of stock, a lot of beans, and a lot of yogurt. When I noticed all the stock boxes and bean cans and especially yogurt cups piling up in the recycling bin, I realized something had to be done. But what? The recent news that full-fat dairy products, including yogurt, might keep us leaner than the lower-fat stuff was nice to hear, but whole milk yogurt has been my favorite for decades, from the waxy cups of yogurt with fruit on the bottom my mom bought back in the 1970s to the cute little tubs of Greek-style yogurt my family buys now. Mom also had a yogurt maker when I was a kid, but after a few tries, it was relegated to the back of a cupboard. Here's a confession. I, too, own a yogurt maker. A 5-year-old brand new yogurt maker. It lives in the back of a cupboard. I felt intimidated by it, and then I covered up my intimidation with scorn. I hear people make yogurt all the time in their oven or use a cooler for insulation, I thought. Who needs a machine? Of course, I was all talk, too fearful of failing at yogurt to try it at all. But the avalanche of yogurt cups finally did me in. It was time to give it a go. There are several cool things about making yogurt. One, it's not ingredient intensive. You need whole milk and some pre-made yogurt with active yogurt cultures, and that's it. Another, once you make a batch, you almost always have your own culture to start the next batch. If you keep it going, you don't have to buy yogurt nearly as often. Your recycling bin will not overflow with yogurt cups. Also, you don't need a special machine, unless you have a temperamental oven like mine. The key to good yogurt is consistent temperature over time. What yogurt does require? A little attention and a little time. I went to my neighborhood grocery and bought whole milk from Kilgus Farm in Fairbury, Illinois. I already had some yogurt at home to act as the starter. I unearthed the yogurt maker. I found a recipe online that seemed serviceable. I washed out all the cute little glass jars, and then the first step was to boil 6 cups of milk and then cool it down to 110 degrees, which took about 20 minutes. Then I mixed some original yogurt with some of the warm milk in a small bowl and whisked it into the rest of the milk. Then I poured it into the little glass jars, put them in the yogurt maker and covered it, and set the time for 15 hours to get that maximum yogurt tang. Like any other recipe, there's the possibility that things won't turn out as expected. That's not what happened here. My yogurt was tangy, and with a little straining through the cheesecloth next time, it'll approximate the Greek-style yogurt my daughter loves. Is this what food writer Tamar Adler refers to as cooking with economy and grace? I think so, yes. Incorporating preparation of staple foods into my weekend once in a while brings big payoffs during the week. I'll get to the beef bourguignon and cassoulet eventually. For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks go to Lisa Braltz and Dave Dickey for production of Backyard Industry.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
It is a Friday afternoon. This is the closing market report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line from the Everly, Iowa facility that belongs to the Andersons. Is Ben Pruse. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about your basis there, what the ethanol plants have or have not been looking for, and what you think the next week will look like.
You know what? Across the board, we are softer on the corn and bean processor side. The board continues to rally, and, long story short, these end users continue to source their grains, and we've seen basis drop here on the corn side about a dime here in the last 10 days, and beans have dropped about almost 20 cents here in the last 10 days.
It is it's different there than it is in many other parts of the Midwest in that case.
Right. Here, having the grain surplus that we do, it's long story short, our end users are just not having to pay up, not having to try real hard, and they're finding the grain that they need.
Wait, but aren't you in an area where the Prevent plant was pretty close by?
Fairly close. That's to about 100 miles to the southeast of us.
So how did you come to the point where you ended up in a surplus in that case?
The southern Minnesota, South Dakota, southern Minnesota, and in our neck of the woods, the yields were excellent. So we, every farmer that we know, or that I know on my deck, is long corn in the bin at home.
and the ethanol plants are waiting it out in that case.
Right. And he's convinced it's going to $5.
Oh. About you? What are you convinced it's going to?
You know, I think we get too much higher here. We're going to have to change our entire fundamental U.S. story. And, I think that's wishful thinking at this point for me.
What do your bids look like for the day?
Here to say we're 441 cash corn and 1327 cash beans.
Tell me a bit more about soybean basis. You said they weren't hunting for soybeans either. Did you have a good soybean crop?
We had a decent, I'll call it a fair crop. However, once we got north of $13 on the beans, you just saw basis just plummet. And, you know, it's just, we've seen some strength in the markets outside of the fundamental story, and we basis just continues to fall apart, to be honest with you.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Bob.
That is Ben Pruse. He's with the Andersons at their Everly, Iowa facility. Joins us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. If you'd like to hear Ben or any of the rest of our programming again, you can always do that on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or you can just call this number, 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's National Sticky Monday. Of course, a key ingredient is cinnamon, which originated in Sri Lanka. Marco Polo is credited with bringing cinnamon on a large scale to Europe. Modern sticky buns likely had their roots in medieval fritters. The sticky bun came to Philadelphia with 18th century English and German immigrants. On this day in agricultural history, in 1741, Jethro Tull died. He was an English agriculturalist and inventor whose ideas were instrumental in the development of modern English agriculture. One of his inventions was a horse-drawn seed planting drill that sowed 3 even rows of seed at once. The music group Jethro Tull was named for him. In 1858, Edwin T. Holmes sells the first electric burglar alarm in the U.S. in Boston, Massachusetts. His workshop was, by the way, used later by Alexander Graham Bell. In 1895, Carl Peter Henrik Dam was born. Dam was a British biochemist who discovered vitamin K in 1939. In 1985, Nathan Pritikin died. He was a nutritionist who believed that exercise and a low-fat, high unrefined carbohydrate diet helped reverse his own heart disease. He founded the Pritikin Longevity Center in 1976. In 1989, on this date, the USDA approved Simplese as a low-calorie fat substitute. In 1994, Whirlpool began manufacturing a refrigerator that was significantly more efficient and did not use Freon. Freon has been implicated in the destruction of ozone in the atmosphere. And that's this date in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. Here's Ed Kieser, meteorologist, with a look at the weather forecast from South America.
A mixed bag of weather prevailed across South America this week, and that will continue for at least the next 10 days. As expected, rain frequently fell across western production areas of Brazil, including not only Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul, but much of neighboring Goiás. The rain is bringing mixed crop impacts, benefiting full-season crops, but hurting double-crop areas with slow harvesting and subsequent planting. Above-average rainfall will continue through at least the next week. To the south, coverage of showers and thunderstorms in Paraguay and South Brazil was less than expected this week, leading to the expansion of stressful dry pockets. Showers and thunderstorms are now starting to increase in coverage, and at least near average rainfall is expected through the coming week, as a few cold fronts approach and stall over the area. This should help later planted corn and soybeans, but the rain is coming a little late to help some crops. The major trouble spot in Brazil remains the eastern areas. It has been dry for weeks and no change is in sight. Full season and second season crops across Minas Gerais, Bahia, Sao Paulo, and far eastern Goiás are in big trouble. Expect crop losses from this part of Brazil. In Argentina, seasonably cool and wet weather dominated this week. More of the same is expected going forward. At first, the rainfall was helpful to crops, but the expected additional rainfall will become unhelpful as surpluses of 5 to 10 inches are already common over the last 5 weeks. Damp conditions and standing water lead to potential disease and pest issues. Alternating long periods of dry and wet weather in Argentina this season have not benefited crops.
Our thanks, of course, go to Ed Kieser, meteorologist, for his look at the South American weather forecast. Here are the way the numbers finished up for the week in Chicago at the CME Group, and we'll give you the changes. These are Friday to Friday. On the weekly, the March corn had a high at $4.56, low at $4.44. Its settlement price at $4.53 was up 7.75 from the previous Friday. December at $4.64, up 4.5 cents. March beans this week, a high of $13.72, the low on the week at $13.35. It's the highest high, by the way, since September. The March settled at $13.70, up 33.25 cents. November beans up $11.53 on its final trade, 23.25 cents higher. March bean meal at $4.55.80, up $5.80. March bean oil at $40.95, finished $1.80 higher for the week. Soft red winter wheat at $6.09, up 11.25. That's the third week higher in the March contract. July up 3 weeks in a row as well at $6.09, 8.75 cents higher. April live cattle at $141.45, up 35 cents on the week. March feeders at $170.70, up 22.5. And lean hogs at $99.35, finished $3.17.5 higher. Remember, you can always find us at willag.org. That's willag.org. This is Illinois Public Media.